Hello, this is your Polycast for Friday, October 7th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, more information about the St. Cloud stabbing attack and an old mining area rebuilds its economy. Former Minnesota Congressman Vin Weber is among 30 former House Republicans who signed a letter announcing they won't vote for Donald Trump for president. The letter made public yesterday calls Trump an unacceptable danger to the nation and unqualified to be president. The signatories don't unify around an alternative choice in the race. Weber says he hasn't decided who he'll vote for or if he'll skip that race on his otherwise straight-ticket Republican ballot.
But the party made a mistake, and I'm sorry that they made a mistake. I supported other candidates, but I can't simply back somebody that I think is bad for the country, and I think a lot of Republicans feel the same way.
Weber supported former Florida Governor Jeb Bush in the presidential primaries. Weber served in Congress for a decade ending in the early 1990s. He's become an influential party strategist and lobbyist in Washington, but still has ties to Minnesota. Chelsea Clinton made a campaign appearance on behalf of her mother yesterday in Minneapolis, where she thanked supporters and urged them to make a strong showing in November. Hillary Clinton's campaign has sent several surrogates to the state, including Bernie Sanders earlier this week. At a rally that included many Latino voters, Chelsea Clinton said she's troubled by political rhetoric being aimed this year at immigrants and other groups.
We have to have a president who understands that words matter and who understands how to actually help us move forward together. When my mom talks about Stronger Together, it's not just a slogan. It is what she believes in the marrow of her bones and in the depths of her heart.
The state director for Republican Donald Trump's campaign said Clinton is sending surrogates to Minnesota to try to paint a false image of enthusiasm among millennial voters. Until yesterday, little was publicly known about the knife attack last month at a mall in St. Cloud that left 10 shoppers wounded and the attacker dead. Family and friends of the attacker, 20-year-old Dahir Adden, have expressed shock that he would have carried out the attack. But for the first time, state and federal investigators yesterday gave a detailed report on the events that led up to the attack at the mall on September 17th, and John Collins has a report.
Investigators talked to 180 witnesses, victims, and family and friends of Dahir Adden. They analyzed 100 hours of surveillance footage and data from computers and other devices. That's helped the FBI develop a detailed timeline of the attack. In the months before, Special Agent Rick Thornton says Adden had changed.
There are reports he withdrew from his network of friends. He became less interested in playing basketball and Xbox, which previously had been his activities of choice. He went from being an excellent student with a high GPA to flunking out of college almost overnight. Some of his friends noted he would become agitated at things which in the past would not have bothered him.
Thornton also said Adden became more interested in Islam, talked to his sisters about it, and may have been radicalized, but they don't know by whom. Thornton says what happened the afternoon before the attack shows that it was premeditated.
He arrived home from work. Although he was not scheduled to return to work until 10 p.m. that evening, he did not change out of his security guard uniform. When asked by family why he was still in his uniform and not sleeping, which was his normal routine, he told him he had work to do tonight.
Adden texted his boss to say he wasn't going to work. He then went to a Super America gas station near his home, where he was a regular customer.
And when the store employee said to Dahir, "See you later," Dahir's reply was, "You won't be seeing me again."
The FBI says Adden stopped home and then drove to Crossroads Mall, less than 2 miles away. On the way, he hit a bicyclist with a Toyota Camry he was driving. The impact cracked the car's windshield. Adden didn't stop. When police later found the car, the victim's eyeglasses were wedged between the hood and the windshield. Adden parked in the mall's south lot. 1 minute later, police received the first of 95 911 calls.
Upon arrival at the Crossroads Center, Adden began attacking victims before he even entered the mall, to include stabbing a pregnant victim.
Video shows Adden wearing his security uniform and carrying two knives that the FBI says matched a set from his family's kitchen. He attacked shoppers from the southeast entrance of the mall to the north side, setting off panic among employees and customers. Stearns County Attorney Janelle Kendall says Adden stabbed a father and son outside an electronics store. Video in the store captured Adden stabbing and chasing a clerk before the victim escapes. More footage shows Adden trying to get into a candy shop as the security gates are pulled shut. 10 people reported being injured. Adden turns towards a Bath & Body Works store, where he asks off-duty Avon police officer Jason Falconer if he's Muslim. Falconer says no.
Adden does not stab him, does not move forward toward him in any way, but as he turns away from Officer Falconer, he observes the knives in both hands and describes them as in each hand and the knife blade up against the wrist. So he immediately tells him, "Stop, I'm a police officer. Put down the weapons," and Adden takes off into Macy's.
Video from Macy's shows Adden run into the store, chased by Falconer. Adden falls to the ground, then charges Falconer, who fires his weapon. Both men fall to the ground. Adden gets up and again pursues Falconer, even at one point walking backwards into gunfire. Adden falls again. In all, Adden was shot 6 times during the incident. The Stearns County Attorney's Office has decided that Falconer's use of force was justified. An attorney for Adden's family says they don't believe he was radicalized and that they're shocked by the videos released yesterday by law enforcement. It's not the son they knew. The FBI says it's continuing its investigation into what may have motivated the attack. With reporting from Peter Cox, I'm John Collins, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Tomorrow, 500 mountain bikers are expected to roll into the tiny northern Minnesota towns of Crosby and Ironton. The race is the biggest event of the year for the region, once known as the Cuyuna Iron Range. The area struggled after the iron mines closed decades ago, but it's now experiencing something of a renaissance based in no small part on biking. Dan Crocker has the story.
Check, check, check. Give me some of that breathing.
You don't want somebody puffing on this thing.
That's John Schaubach. He's 70.
I mean, this is the second year.
And he's just led me, along with Aaron Hautila, on a long mountain bike climb to the top of Miner's Mountain at the Cuyuna Lake State Recreation Area.
This is where most folks...
Whoa! Okay, I'm good.
You better now?
Yeah, I had to get
This is the big photo spot.
The view is awesome. 500-foot deep sparkling lakes surrounded by steep red hills covered with bright green trees. The two are leaders of the Cuyuna Lakes Mountain Bike Crew, a local bunch of volunteers who helped spearhead the creation of 25 miles of mountain bike trails here. Schaubach, a retired hospital administrator, says it looked a lot different when the mines closed in the 1970s.
The community almost imploded. I mean, a lot of the people moved away for the jobs that weren't here, and then this land just lay abandoned. The mining companies just walked away, and there was just bare dirt and discarded equipment and empty holes.
Nobody realized it at the time, but that bare dirt, the enormous piles of dirt and rock that the mining companies shoveled out of the ground, created perfect terrain for mountain biking. And the deep holes would soon fill with crystal clear water, ideal for swimming and paddling.
Our thing was, save it. Don't let it go away. This is special. But we had to convince the whole rest of the world it was special, too.
Barb Grove was hired to head up Cuyuna Range Economic Development in 1983 at a time when the region was desperate for new jobs. She says the community needed to be convinced that the unique landscape was worth protecting.
Because many of them were waiting for the mining to come back, and it wasn't going to come back. But, you know, it's hard to look out into the future past what you've already been experiencing.
So as Grove recalls, a committee was formed to decide what to do with the land. Let's create a park, she said, a big one.
And I can still see them, every one of them, leaning back in their chairs, folding their arms, and saying, no, won't happen, can't happen.
But slowly, Grove and others got local leaders on board, then state politicians. And in 1993, 10 years after the idea was first hatched, the state created the Cuyuna Country State Recreation Area. But the park remained largely undeveloped until the mid-2000s. Jonna Johnson directed the Cuyuna Lakes Chamber of Commerce at the time.
And then they start talking about mountain bikes, and we're like, we're not in mountains. This isn't a mountainous area. Like, it didn't even make sense. And there was such resistance at the beginning.
A Minneapolis-based mountain biking group was pushing a plan to make Cuyuna the first destination trail center in the country, built specifically for mountain bikers. Realtor Joel Hartman says part of the initial resistance was to the $700,000 price tag to build the trails.
Yeah, there was a lot of coffee talk about all those bikers, you know, they don't have pockets in their pants. How can they bring money into the town?
Others were upset about losing an area to ride ATVs and motorbikes. But in 2011, after federal funding was secured by the late Northeast Minnesota congressman and cycling enthusiast Jim Oberstar, the trails opened. And soon after, the mountain bikers started coming. Jonna Johnson, the former Chamber of Commerce director, who 2 years ago opened a coffee shop, says most of the initial skeptics have now come around.
They're seeing the growth, and now you can't deny it. You just can't. I had 40 bikers in here twice this summer, all getting ice cream cones, and their bikes were stretched half a block. And we almost had traffic accidents out front because everyone's slowing down. What's going on over there?
Local bike shop owner Jenny Smith says her business has doubled in the past year, with customers from around the country and Canada, Australia, and Europe.
Once people saw the vision and started seeing the cars coming in with the bikes on the racks, people in the stores and in the restaurants, spending money in town. Over the last few years, people have really opened up their arms. There's a hopefulness here now that there never was before.
Visitation to the park has jumped 60% since the trails opened, to 190,000 people a year. Now, even the most ardent of cycling advocates are quick to point out that mountain biking can't solve all a region's economic ills. The median household income in the area, for example, is only about $30,000 a year. That's half the statewide average. But realtor Joel Hartman says the trails have sparked a flurry of development in downtown Crosby, including several new businesses that look straight out of uptown Minneapolis, a yoga studio, a farm-to-table restaurant, and a cafe, art gallery, bike shop opening this fall.
It's unbelievable. You know, from today, 18 months ago, probably 50% of the buildings in town were vacant. But now, you know, 18 months later, there is very few opportunities for investors to buy buildings because they have been purchased.
And yes, one of those buildings will house a microbrewery.
Brewmaster!
Aaron Hautila introduces me to Nick Heisinga, who's hanging drywall in what soon will be the Cuyuna Brewing Company.
So this is going to be the tap room. You know, we've got the original tin ceiling and original hardwood floor from 1914.
Heisinga is from Wilmer, where he makes vaccines for the Wilmer Turkey Company. Fermenting with bacteria, he assures me, is very similar to fermenting with yeast. He's wanted to open a brewery for years, and after riding the Cuyuna mountain bike trails last year, he decided downtown Crosby was the right place to do it.
The problem right now is the trails are young, and there's the vision to expand, and if they hit the master plan of 75 miles, a brewery would be a no-brainer.
The Cuyuna Lakes mountain bike crew has raised more than $500,000 from events, donations, and a matching grant from a local foundation to expand the trail system to 75 miles. They're hopeful for another $3.6 million in state funding to complete the build-out. Volunteer President Aaron Hautila says the trails have already improved the area's quality of life and have helped draw doctors, teachers, and young entrepreneurs to the area.
And we're not done yet. I mean, the big aha is when we recruit the next big business here, because why will they come? Well, because you got a world-class trail system, and you have unbelievable clear water, and you have just an amazing experience.
And if that happens, locals are confident their future will once again be paved with red dirt, this time from mountain biking instead of mining. Covering the environment, I'm Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Crosby.
And that's your Polycast for this Friday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you again here next week.